Blog Talk Radio.
Masonic Effects. This is Blog Talk Radio, and you found the program on discussion around issues related to Freemasonry. Opinion pieces, for the most part, picked from discussions that I've had with fellow Masons. It's the 30th day of August 2015. It's also the 242nd day of the year. That's right. That only leaves 123 days left until the new year. I wanted to say hello to all of the people offshore who are tuning in, and promise you we're working out the technical aspects of being able to have guests on board. So that said, get ready for some discussion about the change and purpose and the tenaciousness of Freemasonry. What would life be like without controversy? If there was only one opinion about the craft, that would be remarkably unusual. It would mean that we're in the hands of people that we've benefited from the organizational advantages of tyrants. Don't get me wrong. If we look at a brief glimmer of the history of Greece, for example, or Rome, excuse me, the nation did well when, particularly when there were tyrants, but it was people that had brought the tyrant in and were satisfied with the accommodations required because of the gains, the decisiveness, and protections that it provided to all of the citizens of Rome. Of course, we know, the history has taught us that what happened to the tyrants. There's a constant evolution, and then what happened to the empire. Always things are evolving. So to think that what we're talking about here today is immune to that would be a mistake. That what we're going through is also part of the ongoing evolution. And what one of us has the conceit to think that we can influence what's going on. Perhaps we need to step back and think about the point of destiny. Moving through time, can the philosophy of masonry be influenced? It's not anything to dismiss, I don't think. On the last day, on your, I presume that we're all headed toward toward our the coming to terms with our life and death and dying. I presume that some of us, like me, a little sooner than some of you younger folks, I certainly hope. But on those last moments, when things become, we would hope that things will become important, that each one of us will have a perspective that we haven't, that we've earned, that we've accumulated over the course of a lifetime. What is it that you want to have on your mind during those last hours and minutes, if you have the advantage of or the circumstance to have that? If sometimes death visits us very quickly, doesn't it? I'm pretty sure that what's going to be on your mind isn't going to be a boring meeting or somebody a thoughtless that stands up and says things that are pretty meaningless. It's not going to be about the shortcomings. It's not going to be about the disappointments. It's not going to be about any of those things. It's going to be about things significant. It will be about the people closest to us. It will be about the events that helped us to enjoy life and it helped us to define. And we'll be looking for the answer to those questions that have been put to us a long time ago with really no substance to help us address them. Is there meaning to all of this? Well, the Masonic Order offers us an opportunity to live with purpose. Now, here's an interesting thing. A couple of years ago, I've been, you know, I have, I'm not as old as masonry, but I'm old enough to, and I pay attention like a lot of you do. The things that I've noticed is that after the initial intensity, that emotional experience of the initiatory rites, there are questions. The largest question is what then, and we try to fill that in. And as you can see, we look at each other askance, wondering what's motivated, what the real motivation is to do things that really aren't bringing about a great deal of change. This is an interesting question because we're looking at this from the other end of the monocular, so to speak. The purpose is to protect and preserve what it is we have. The illusion is that we're preserving and protecting something that was. Now think about this. If we were, let's say you and I discovered a point in history that was remarkable. Let's say, the Renaissance. Okay. And we could no more stop time. We could no more arrest change to preserve that than we could stop the expansion of the sun. This is a thought experiment that we're doing. It's interesting in and of itself, but not in terms of an outcome. We often find ourselves narrowed into perspective of our own lives when we become aware of changes going on around us. We don't stop them. We and the meagerness, you know, as we go along, we have to stop blaming shortcomings on other people. We can't walk around at a certain age. What age of maturity do you have a sense of perspective where you stop blaming your life on, you know, your parents or your shortcomings in education or the country that you live in? At what point do you step up and take responsibility for yourself? Well, let's presume that we all eventually do that, although not everybody, but the majority do. that's a point where we need to be able to address the fact that things that we are aware of things that we like, and we are aware of familiarity. We are creatures of habit, great, great habit. And when that habit is interrupted, we find that it comes to our attention. We notice it. And that, in those moments, we can feel a bit of agitation. There's a bit of a slight disappointment. And I say slight, very slight. Like, how big is it that you have to use your voice dials the phone instead of putting your finger into a ring on a desk phone? How much of an adjustment is that? But while the change is going on around us, some of us have never been taught to that this process is something that is what we've been hotwired to connect with. We are hotwired as people to accept the change. Now, don't tell me that in the day that if there was a new tool that was used in the construction of the pyramids, it was better and allowed the people to do the job more effectively and more correctly, that all of the tradesmen, all of the overseers wouldn't have been clamoring for that. Don't tell me that. That's just absurd. That notion hasn't stopped to this day. We now are moving into a period where we have tools that are different in concept. We now have jobs that are based on information rather than on tasks. These are meaningful jobs, perhaps not familiar to our grandfathers. We know that our children, are being prepared for jobs that don't exist right now. And rightfully so. Time goes on. There are different needs created as time changes. The community, the world around us, has undergone an interesting change. It's not large, it's not small, but I think it's interesting. Those pictures from the 60s, from outer space, we were able to see the entire blue marble floating in the darkness. That gave us a sense of it's as profound as the effect of a mirror, where a mirror allows us to look at ourselves. Now we all take that for granted, don't we? Just like we take a wristwatch and the timepiece for granted. We have little idea what time is, but we carry this around. Is it about habit? And we use these numbers to convince each other that we've organized time, and time is about seconds and minutes and hours and days and weeks and months and years. But we don't know what the heck it is that we're evaluating there. That notion, think about it. When we didn't have a reflection, there was less of a sense of self and less of a sense of awareness in the world. We know this because we can track the writings. It doesn't mean that people weren't, on an individual basis, aware of themselves. You would rightfully say, well, look at the reflection in the surface of a pond. Right. Now, everybody doesn't exactly have the ability to, in a rushing stream, there is no reflection. So you have to have those conditions right in order to pick up that notion of self. It's an abstraction. It's an abstraction that we went on to develop. And it's not left us because it's just become something that's part of the background. It's part of the narrative now, just like a wristwatch. You remember history teaches us how significant the development of a timepiece was. But we have books on our shelves that teach us the difficulty of understanding what time actually is. So now we have new terms, new words for it. Words have always been coming into our culture, whether it's the culture of masonry or the general culture in which masonry exists and the planet. Those words being around time-space. Can we measure, or can we actually let our minds wander it reach out and begin to understand what it is that we call time by seeing ourselves relative to the conditions within the universe. All right, 100 billion years from now, our sun, it won't be safe to live here because our sun will be expanding, and this will, our planet will be too hot. We'll no longer be the bears found the just comfortable bed. We'll no longer be there. I have great faith that there will be a group, there will be a mind that will have successfully achieved interplanetary travel, so that we'll find another planet that will accommodate the life, human life. Will human life then be the same as it is now? Well, of course not. Look at the evolution that the human, how long have we been around? What, 300,000 years? But we're talking about processes in tens of billions. Here we back up and we're talking about a process that's, what, 300 years? Give us a little bit of time to grow and to develop. Wait until the masonry is 1,000 years old, and then it would be an interesting conversation. What is it that we have, and how does it link to the past? Well, you and I can have that lively conversation today. And in fact, I think we should. Time is a very, very interesting commodity. The UK's first mobile phone call was made 30 years ago this year. Can you imagine? And I use the example of the UK because it's a lot bigger than Canada. Canada is like, still in our infancy, although we're losing our innocence. Our political innocence, we're growing, we're learning, we're just getting to the point where we're learning to shave. But I'm referring to the UK because it has a different provenance. Did you know that before the crisis in Syria and Lebanon, that's going on right now, Lebanon hosted just 8,000 refugees. Now it hosts more than 1 million. Not an issue for us? Certainly it is. It is because we are, remember that blue marble floating in the darkness? We're a global community. We've seen it. Once we see it, we can begin to, once we define something, and we've defined ourselves as a global community, there we are floating, and so far we're alone, and we really have a hard time accepting the fact that we're alone. Now, we're a clamorous creature, and we're killing each other off. Now, is this likely? And we're, you know, the environment is becoming polluted. It's not about pointing fingers. This is about how history will measure what's been going on. Before industrialization, the water was clearer, the air was clearer before we had combustible engines. It gave us advantages, but at a cost. Now, can we sustain that cost? Depends. If you suppress the information from the scientists, which in this day and age we've tended to do, we'll want to continue in this this paradise revisited, where everything is going to remain the way it was. The day of innocence, when we could spray oil along the sides of the roads just to contain dust, until we began to measure the effects of the pollutants in that oil on the water table and what that did to wildlife, and effectively begin to realize that we're living in systems. We're living in systems. The masonry, can we affect this kind of change? Can we influence you and I as we float along in our own individual little bubbles? Can we influence our own growth relative to what's going on around us? let's be optimistic and say yes. And it depends. There's a lot of qualifiers to that. Let's think about that just for a moment. You think about this notion of how the craft exposes us to ideas. Does it teach us those ideas? Does it expect us to learn? Well, in a way, it does. And do we live up to that? Well, what we see are the shortcomings and the efforts. And we don't have any way of measuring that. So we convince ourselves with it that we have this cheery kind of atmosphere that we want to exist in. But it's hard to reconcile the reality, the presence of history. What does history do? When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the effect of history, the context. I don't know if we'd say ruthlessness, but the clarity of history. In the meantime, this is a little piece from Stan Rogers about the Blue Nose. Just because we, here in this country, we launched the Blue Nose after decades of a refit, and the bureaucrats had a field day with it, telling the boat builders on our East Coast how to do it. It cost millions to fix that process. Enjoy this. See what you think.
Once again with the tide, she slips her lines, turns her head and comes away. Where she lay so still there at privateer's wharf, now she quickly gathers way. She will range far south from the harbor mouth and rejoice with every wave. Oh, who will know the Blue Nose in the sun? Feel her bow rise free of Mother Sea in a sunburst cloud of spray that stings the cheek while the rigging will speak of sea miles gone away. She is always that thunderful breath hard over as she'll lay. Who will know the Blue Nose in the sun? Who will know the Blue Nose in the sun? That proud fat queen of the Grand Bank fleet portrayed on every dime. New hard work in time, hard work in every line. The rich men's toys of the Gloucester boys with their tokens in a cod. They snap their spars and strain to pass her by. But she left them all behind. Now her namesake daughter remains to show what she's been. What every schoolboy remembers and will not come again. To think she's the last of the Grand Bank scooters that fed so many men. Who will know the Blue Nose in the sun? Who will know the Blue Nose in the sun?
What a country, man. We liked it so much we put it on the dime, one of our coins. Too much. Just incredible. Just incredible. When Albert Einstein, about 40 years ago, was asked how the West had come to the idea of scientific discovery, remember, knowledge from the East, it's still a puzzle. What happened to the development of science in the East? Where did it go? Today, it's battles and dictatorships and clamor. It seems that we're the peril that none of us were prepared for was this toxic mixture of wealth accumulation and exploitation of peoples and power politics. But he gave a simple answer. He said the development of Western science is based on two great achievements. The invention of the formal logical system in Euclidean geometry. Now, this article was written before we had fractal geometry. So remember, different things have evolved. But remember, two great achievements: the invention of the formal logical system, that's that purity of the Euclidean geometry, by the Greek philosophers, and the discovery of the possibility to find out causal relationships by systematic experimentation. The systematic experimentation was credited to the Renaissance. Yeah, all of those alchemists, you think that they were, do you mock them blithely today? Really? So in his opinion, one has not to be astonished that the Chinese sages have not made these steps. The astonishing thing is that these discoveries were made at all. Einstein was surely correct in seeing scientific discovery as an institution of Western culture. His characteristically simple explanation, however, does not take account of the remarkable transformations of the venture of discovery in this century. The works of discovery at every age shape and shake up the thinking of the whole literate community. Now, that's an important distinction. When we're talking about literacy, we can extend the culture of Masonry to that. How literate are we? Well, we become literate by doing our research, by reading, by absorbing information about the past. The familiar example, of course, is how the works of Copernicus and his followers disturbed Western culture with the realization that the Earth was no longer at the center. This was in Copernicus, lived between 1473 and 1543, the Polish guy, yeah? Most recent examples are the impact of Darwinian biology and Freudian psychology. Nowadays, the space sciences, arcane and specialized though they have become, continue to have a profound and wide influence on the whole community's thinking. We're not scientists. We're part of what's called the lay community. Nothing wrong with that. It's what we are. I live in a world of experts. Everybody's an expert in something that I'm not an expert in. And it's okay. I have a friend who experiences tremendous anxiety when he is exposed to something that he doesn't understand. It causes him great, great anxiety. And he becomes quite alarmed. And his whole mood intensifies. And I thought that must be very, very difficult because there's so much in this world around us that we can't possibly fully grasp, that we want to adopt that notion that we're floating along as observers, not necessarily conscripted to understand everything going on around us, but to accept certain rules of thought, like that logic and that notion of that experiment leads to causal relationships. What caused this? Well, we do some experiments that help us understand this. Then today we have this fellow Stephen Hawking still running around. Stephen Hawking wrote a book that, if you try to, it's a difficult feed, Brief History of Time from the Big Bang to Black Holes. He did that in 1988. Hard to believe. I can remember when that was first on the bookshelves. And he's entered the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest period, 4 years, of any book on the British bestseller list. And it sold 5 million copies. We've seen the wide and enduring popular interest in the readable tales of Jules Verne and H.G. Wells and the, remember E.T.? Yeah, and his tribe, and the science fiction of Isaac Asimov and Arthur Clarke, are just remarkable. Which do you prefer? It's like, read them both. iRobot was quite an interesting series, and even in older serious works like those of James Jeans and Arthur Eddington, and in the current writings of Herbert Friedman, Nowadays, public interest in discovery is greater than ever. But the role of the discoverer in the space sciences has been transformed with novel consequences for the thinking of lay people like you and I. There was a so-called great age of discovery. Leif Erikson, Columbus, Cortez, Magellan, Drake. But our proper prototype instead is the prosaic, less romanticized James Cook. This was 18th century stuff. He was born after the craft. He was not, well, after the craft administration. He has not had his due in the annals of discovery, that many thing. But this is a common fate of negative discoverers. Cook was perhaps the greatest negative discoverer. He earned a place in the chronicles of seafaring by proving that the fabled great southern continent did not exist. That fabled land was supposed to reach up from the Antarctic towards Southeast Asia, making the Indian Ocean a lake. We tend to forget or underestimate the difficulty of negative discovery. It is far easier to encounter some new island or even an unexpected new continent than to prove some long-admired fixture of the imagination does not exist. To put a new land, a new passageway on the map, one needed only to go there and happily surprise the world with a new presence. But to prove a negative, even for the logicians, has not insisted that it was theoretically possible. Impossible is an exhausting enterprise. It demands exploring and discarding of imaginable possibilities. Negative discovery is also much less welcome than an act of simple affirmative discovery. People don't like to have their imaginations unfurnished. The legendary Southland, the Great Southland, which Cook erased from the map, had been a promising field of empire with natural wealth of incalculable value. It remained so as long as it was never found. To prove that the Great Southland did not exist was not only an unwelcome disillusion, it required one of the most terrifying sea voyages in history. He left England in July 1772, and Cook didn't return until July 1775. He had two newly built Whitby colliers, the Resolution, so this is a 462-ton ship, and the Adventure, which was smaller, 340 tons. And he came down around the Cape of Good Hope, and he reached 71 degrees 10 minutes south, and then he traversed the whole southernmost rim of the Pacific in the Antarctic regions, and then into the Atlantic up toward the Cape of Good Hope and back to England. But one teetering on the edge of the Antarctic ice, overshadowing and threatening by cracking and crumbling iceberg Alps. Cook's instructions took account of both possibilities, that the continent did or did not exist. There you go. If he had found any part of it, he had orders from the Admiralty to survey it, claim it for Britain, and distribute medals to the natives. Officers and crew were to observe strict secrecy about the voyage, and all logs and journals were to be confiscated after the ship's return. In this, one of the greatest and surely one of the longest discoveries of history, Cook sailed more than 70,000 miles. Never before had there been so long a voyage with one focused, inquiring purpose. Not to plant a new colony, not to seek El Dorado or find gold or silver or precious gems, nor capture slaves. Cook made his earlier voyage to Tahiti brilliant feat, for he used astronomical observations of the transit of Venus. Now his grand success with the Resolution and the Adventure was resounding testimony to the courage of the modern skeptical spirit. That's, I think, of this essay, one of the key sentences. the key ideas, the resounding testimony to the courage of modern skeptical spirit. Now, this is a contemporary event because skepticism, for the longest time, we were, you know, the first and second estate would tell us what to think, and that was accepted. To do otherwise was wrong. We're not thinking necessarily of Anglo-Saxon or UK or Europe. We're really going into the 500 BC and the Greek before Greece had formed into the cities had agreed to form into larger organizations. But the appearance of this, the idea that this is a resounding testimony of the courage of the modern skeptical spirit, it's the curiosity. Skepticism, we can say the skeptic is, I think, a little rough. Because with a skeptic, we can never be sure whether they're telling us the truth, their opinion is what they believe or not. But we can embrace the idea of curiosity. We have been allowed to express our curiosity. No rock unturned. No question unanswered, unasked. We still don't have all of the answers because we raise questions. But we begin the process of experimentation, trial and error, and re-examining what we've learned by each trial. Meanwhile, people lacking that sense of scientific literacy or the logic of that still shy away from efforts that may lead to failure, still look at efforts and initiatives in terms of the passage or failure, and not embrace this notion of the courage it takes, the courage of the modern skeptical spirit to go into the unknown. Much safer. Remember, we're much happier when our expectations are met. We want the grand southern land. We want Cook to discover that, the great Southland. Do we know him today? No, not really. More information comes out about the Spaniards and about the Portuguese and the Dutch traders. This notion of the Grand South Land didn't happen, so it was a non-discovery. We don't like that. Let's just for a moment begin to realize that perhaps these same processes are likely happening to the genius of masonry. After a time, after the really interesting introduction to the craft, I began to realize that the fellows around me, but I liked the philosophy and history of the craft more than I liked the process of lodge, the process of and protocols. I liked the purity of the history, the clarity, enough to begin to realize that history, and then you begin to realize the history can be manipulated, can it? It always has been. And so you begin to filter out the inaccuracies. Well, if we begin to understand human perception, we understand that if four of us are looking at an event happening in front of us and within minutes are asked what we saw or what we witnessed, we'll get four different opinions. And it's because of the way our neurology works. Well, when did we discover how our neurology works? So we have advantages in this day, 2015, that our earlier, the ancients didn't have. they had other advantages that people earlier than they didn't have. So as we have progressed and we have changed, and the, relative to the teachings of the craft, the value of masonry continues. Even though the cultural change around us influence is strongly influential, very much influential. It's remarkable. And it has always been that way. Always. So now I'll ask the pertinent question about this courage of skepticism. Can you begin to speculate at its very best, and do it from a qualified position? Do it with some reference to known fact. Can you make a credible statement about where we are with regards to the future of the craft and the past of the craft? Can you begin to describe that fulcrum, that point, that head of the needle that we're resting on right now? And then what do you see when you can describe that? Tell us, share, what do you see from that perspective? I think we begin to experience quite an interesting dialogue when that happens. And that will, I hope, begin to encourage Masons that the things that are going on around us today are perhaps the trivia. They really are trivial compared to where we're headed, this fascinating journey. I'll be right back. Producers try to help us capture in our minds these pictures of medieval times. This is music by singers that are known as the Medieval Babes and others. It's interesting, very interesting work. Here are six things you need to know. This has been trying to summarize what's been the main products of the progress of cosmology in the past 400 years. The Earth is not the center of the universe. It's not. The Sun is not the center of the universe. Our galaxy is not the center of the universe. Our type of matter is not the dominant constituent of the universe. This dark matter predominates. Remember? Our universe, whether seen and unseen, is not the only universe. Our physics is not the only physics. There might exist separate universes with completely different physics. So, as one thoughtful woman put it, are we in this age of, does this make us the age of the Gordian knots? N-O-T-S? Does it? It's fascinating. But true. Universe is of an infinite age. Matter is continuously created at all times. The Big Bang, the universe is of finite age. Matter and energy are conserved as the universe expands. And then there's this notion of eternally inflating Big Bang, that our universe has a finite age. The creation of all matter, energy in our universe occurred at the end of the inflationary phase, when the incredible energy density of the false vacuum converted to ordinary matter and radiation. Well, I think that's a light, you know, that's about as light as you can get for this time of the day. Now, we started this episode talking about us moving through time and whether the philosophy of Masonry can be influenced by that process. And I think it's rather obvious that the answer is yes. That as we move along on this this little marble, speeding through space, we are learning different things. It's and those things that we learn allow us to change this perspective. We're spinning around about 1,040 miles per hour. We spin. That's remarkable. We're not flying off because we understand the notions of physics. There is gravity, and it pulls us. How does it? And our thinkers have asked the questions: how does the peach know how to respond to gravity? So are things changing? Absolutely, because we're progressing. Change was not something that can be stopped and is not. But we have to wrestle with this notion of negative discovery, of the unmet expectation. Perhaps this notion of the philosophical utopia of Freemasonry doesn't really exist except in our imagination. Perhaps that paradise exists only to satisfy our thinking, to give us goals, to help us ascribe, to give purpose and meaning to our life, to allow us to effectively express the meaning of things significant in the world as we see them. And what about this amazing capacity that we have as human beings to take our thinking not only logically and linearly, but sideways? How foolish, how incredibly odd of us to have entered a poetic period of romanticism in the 18th and 19th century. How did we ever come up with this? Tennyson said about life, "I sometimes hold it half a sin to put in words the grief I feel, for words like nature half reveal and half conceal the soul within." In the afternoon they came unto a land in which it seemed always afternoon. All round the coast the languid air did swoon, breathing like one that hath a weary dream. all experience is an arch. We're through gleams that untraveled world. That's our experience. Tennyson talks about this notion of experience moving forward. All experience is an arch. Where through gleams that untraveled world. What do we see when we look through that arch of experience? Isn't that an interesting command of idea? These ideas, I think, are woven into the fabric, a tapestry of Freemasonry. Notions that help us to answer those peculiar questions that will occur at some point in the future about purpose and meaning, when those things are important. They may not be important today. I hold it true, whate'er befall, I feel it when I sorrow most. 'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. It's been a real interesting occasion being with you again. I'm going to say goodbye now. I hope you've liked the program. Thanks for your support. Sorry for the interruptions. Somebody on our technical crew was out messing around on a sailboat. So you're going to hear more about that, I'm pretty sure. There's some people that are doing things in our country, making claims about ownership of the seafloor up in the Arctic. The idea about the poles being these warm places has changed. The glaciers are melting really fast, and the water levels are in the oceans are increasing. So all that stuff that the speculation, the calculations about what will happen to the cities along the coast that are just feet above the sea level. Well, all of that is going to be tested. We're going to discover the accuracy of the geometry, the accuracy of the physics. Water goes up over there, the shoreline disappears, just as we've had this year along the Great Lakes. The shores, the beaches have shrunk as the water level has started to restore. This is about, now we're realizing that the year-round passage through the Northwest Passage is going to be realized quite quickly. When is that? Well, you know, it's happening sooner than later, isn't it? In the meantime, I hope that you will be able to use parts of this program as reference points. With some other time, we meet to continue on with the notions of negative discovery and take a run at the musical myths, like the case of Beethoven. It's a little bit of a teaser for an upcoming show. Here's Stan Rogers. This is a song about the Northwest Passage. It's a short little thing, but...
For just one time,
bye.
I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea. Tracing one warm line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea. Westward from that day the strait is there, 'twas said to lie, the sea route to the Orient, for which so many died, seeking gold and glory, leaving weathered broken bones, and a long-forgotten lonely cairn of stones. For just one time I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one warm line through a land so wide. centuries thereafter, I take passage overland in the footsteps of brave counsel where its sea of flowers began, watching cities rise before me, then behind me sink again. This tardiest explorer driving hard across the plain. Ah, for just one time I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one warm line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea.
Thanks for joining us. Look forward to having you here again soon.